the House Resources Committee to order. We have before us House concurrent resolution. Have order in the committee, please. House concurrent resolution 4 before us, and we have Speaker Porter here is prepared to give testimony. We thank you all for your interest in this bill. It's always heartening to me when the public shows up and gives their input. And Speaker Porter.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. The bill before you came to my attention because I have had the opportunity, as I'm sure you will today, to hear why the project under discussion, the line in British Columbia, is a project worthy of consideration. And there's another point of view that thinks that the process that they have there is too risky for us and we should intercede. I have had the opportunity to hear both sides of this argument, and I guess it goes without saying that since I sponsored this resolution that I have made a decision. I'm not asking you to take that as the evidence of its merit. I'm asking you, if you would, to listen to the testimony and make a judgment of your own. You will hear that the system in place in British Columbia is different than the system in place in Alaska for permitting mines. I guess the question that must be asked is, does that necessarily make it a system that is deficient? I don't think so. The House majority for the years that I have been here has basically supported the notion of responsible resource development. Whether you say responsible resource development or resource development in a responsible way shouldn't make a difference, but I think in this case perhaps some people are trying to convince others that it does make a difference which way you say that. That is to say that the system that is in place in British Columbia, which I have heard described as a new untested system. I think you will hear, and please ask whether that is the case, but I think you will hear that that is not the case, is a system that allows, after initial certification inquiries, the permits to be issued as the development occurs, as opposed to the way we do it, where most of this action, almost all of it, happens before any development may take place. The criticism of this type of a system I have heard is that once the project is underway, it has a self-fulfilling quality and that the permitting is actually diminished because of that. I think you will hear from the folks that know about it and do it that isn't the case. But on the other side of that coin, it can be said, and I would submit has, in some cases at least, been the fact that the system that we have in place that allows challenges and repeated inquiries and virtual arbitrations before one bit of a project has begun on the permitting process is an opportunity for obstructionism so that a project will never occur. I guess what we have to look at is, are the safeguards that we all know for environmental protection we want present in this system? I would ask you to listen for a few things during the presentations that you'll hear. You'll have an opportunity to hear about the system as I say, as itself, and required judgment of, does it really meet the same standards, albeit perhaps in a different method, that our systems and our standards for environmental protection have? In the project itself, you'll hear discussions of a road. I guess the question you must ask is the system adequate for protecting the concerns that folks have about this road construction? is it really going to be a public road? There are First Nation considerations within Canada about this project. I think you should ask, are these First Nation considerations really about the mine project or long-standing land disputes? Have the First Nation folks been involved in the process, and will they continue to be involved in the process? You'll hear about concerns about the tailings from the mine, where they're going to be located, and the quality and quantity of the tailings. What risks are there involved? Our system would want every single one of these questions answered before the project could begin. I guess the question remains again, will the standards that we expect to be met under the system that, that they have? Finally, I think you'll hear that one of the things that this resolution asked to not occur is a referral to the International Joint Commission of this project. I think you should determine whether that referral and the steps and time that that would involve really would provide any additional information or protections to this project than would already be in place within the system. And is it then appropriate or obstructionistic? Chairman, I thank you very much for the opportunity to present this overview. I would like to ask members of the our counterparts in British Columbia from the government, Mr. Keith Ogilvie and Norm Ringstead with the Environmental Assessment Office in British Columbia, to come up, tell you all about their system, how it works, and be available for questions. Thank you very much.
Speaker, Chair notes that I didn't take roll, and I'd also like to recognize Representative James, who's in the audience, and invite her to join us at the table if you'd like, free up at least one seat for the public. And Mr. Speaker, you're welcome to join us
at
the
Mr.
table.
Chairman, I have to, I'm required to be elsewhere, but I'm sure you're
your duties are demanding of your time. Thank you. And okay, well, I would like to invite Mr. Norm Ringstead and Keith, I hesitate to mispronounce your name, Ogilvie, is that correct, to the witness stand, if you'd be kind enough to join us up there.
Witness stand?
Witness stand, yeah. This isn't an inquisition or anything, but...
We have another chair for them
there? For witnesses.
No more chairs.
That's fine. Norm will be doing the majority of the talking. He's far more knowledgeable about the direct process. I'll be available if there are any questions that I can answer.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for joining us. I guess the bottom line, cut to the quick question, is the system of overview that you have in place equal to or compatible with what Alaska's system is? Because I think we certainly don't have the level of interest in most mine projects in Alaska as yours is generated, and I think if you could answer that question for me and possibly put to rest any fears that people might have about it, I would like to give you that opportunity and appreciate you being available to answer questions. But that's the number one question, I guess, for me is explain to us what safeguards you put that you'll have in place to address the concerns of, I'm sure you know the concerns and criticisms, I would assume.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to provide this type and level of summary of our processes. I'd like to start out by introducing myself. I'm Norm Ringstead. I'm with the British Columbia Environmental Assessment Office in Victoria, and I'm here today to provide information to all parties, and I'm not here today, nor is my friend Keith Ogilvie. We are not here today to take a position on the resolution. I'd like to be able to answer your question by giving you a quick summary of our process, what we went through right from the beginning through to where we're going to end up, and then hopefully that will be enough of a basis on which you to make a determination of the comparability of our processes and our products. As you may be aware, this project has been under review since 1994. The Talsuqua project was subject to the British Columbia Environmental Assessment Act, as most, if not all, major mining projects are in British Columbia. The project was also subject to the provisions of the Canadian Environmental Assessment Act. So there was a federal Canadian government review process, as well as a provincial government review process, that this project had to come through prior to a decision being made on whether or not it could proceed. As part of the meeting of the requirements of both of those processes, I chaired a committee called the Talsuqua Project Committee, and that committee comprised of provincial British Columbia government agencies, the Yukon government agencies, First Nations, Alaska State, and U.S. federal agency representatives. We, as a committee, coordinated the overall review of this project to meet the requirements of both our British Columbia Environmental Assessment Act and the Canadian Environmental Assessment Act. And we did that over a 3.5-year period, beginning in the fall of 1994 and culminating in a set of recommendations to our respective decision makers on the Canadian side in March of 1998. I should point out that the Environmental Assessment Act, as it applied to this project, is a fairly new process in and of itself. The Act was proclaimed in June of 1995. However, the Environmental Assessment Act is modeled on the previous British Columbia Mine Development Assessment Act and process, and that process has been underway in British Columbia in various forms since 1975. Since 1976, there has been a coordinated overall environmental assessment review process for mining projects in British Columbia. Throughout the review, we ensured that all of the issues that were raised were taken into consideration. We identified issues specific to the potential for transboundary effect on water quality and fisheries. And knowing that there was a potential for transboundary effects, we complied with the transboundary consultation, notification, information requirements of the treaties for ensuring that jurisdictions, our neighboring jurisdictions, were involved in the review and also that their issues were taken into consideration. In March of 1998, at the conclusion of the review, the British Columbia Ministers of Energy and Mines and Environment, Lands and Parks approved the project to proceed to permitting, and they did that with the issuance of a project approval certificate. In and around the same time, the federal government, under the Canadian Environmental Assessment Act, accepted the project review conclusions as meeting their review needs and also authorized the project to proceed to the next level of review under our statutory permitting. I should point out that in British Columbia, we have a two-stage decision-making process. The first stage is a conceptual level of assessment, identification, and resolution of strategic issues. If it is determined that there are no strategic flaws that the project would arise in the project during the permitting stage, that is the time when the British Columbia government approves the project to move to the permitting stage. At the permitting stage, there are a number of provincial and federal statutory permit requirements, at which time the detailed technical assessment, design, and mitigation plans are put together in support of making applications for the permits. And until each of those permits are obtained for each of the components of development, no construction takes place. The project approval certificate given at the first stage of review does not authorize a project to actually go into construction. It only authorizes it to move to the permitting process. In March, when the decisions were made to have the project move to the permitting process, it was acknowledged that there were a number of outstanding concerns raised by U.S. federal agencies and Alaska state agencies concerning a number of issues related to transboundary effects. As a result of that, British Columbia and Canada did two major things. Number one, it made a formal invitation to Alaska state and U.S. federal agencies to continue to participate actively in the review of those permit applications by way of sitting on a regionally based standing committee of permitting agencies, that and that committee would take the role of coordinating the review of those permit applications and would include the further consideration of the concerns raised by Alaska state and U.S. federal agencies. The second thing that we did is we embarked on an 11-month continuation of bilateral discussions and information exchanges between BC, Canada, and U.S. federal and state agencies. We met in Washington, D.C. in April of 98, in Vancouver in November of 98, and in Seattle in December of 98. And through that 11-month process of continuing to discuss and resolve the issues raised by American interest, we produced a number of further documents, further communications we had, and it was through that 11 months of iterative dialogue and consultation that the technical specialists on water quality and fisheries on the Canadian side dealt directly with the technical specialists on the Alaskan and U.S. federal side, and it was our hope on the Canadian side that that 11 months of bilaterals would bring the comfort level up of the U.S. agencies to agree that our permitting process is a process within which the remaining issues, which are technical in nature, can be resolved, and the standards for environmental protection through that permitting process will be that equivalent to that in Alaska. As to the comparability between Alaska state or U.S. federal processes and our B.C. and Canada processes, I cannot answer the question any more specific than the background I've given.
Thank you, sir. Does members of the committee have any questions? I'm going to attempt to bring some more chairs in here in a little while. When that happens, we'll maybe call a brief at ease and we'll get some more. More seats for the folks. I apologize. If I'd have known that this many people were going to show up, I probably would have arranged for a little bit bigger space. Are there any other cases dealing with transboundary circumstances between Alaska and Canada?
In a mining context? There are a number of mining projects located in northwestern British Columbia on transboundary rivers. There is the Premier Silback Mine near Hyder, Alaska, on a tributary leading into the Salmon River. There is the Cominco Snip Gold Mine on a tributary leading to the Iskut River. And in the same general vicinity, there is the International Skyline Johnny Mountain Mine and the Prime Resources SK Mine, all SK being in the headwaters of the Unic River. These projects were also subject to the province's mine review process prior to proceeding to permitting. They cleared the first hurdle. They moved into the permitting stage, and these projects also moved into the development operation stage. Some of them are closed or in the process of being abandoned and reclaimed. During those reviews, there was an invitation for American input at the EA review, and it is my understanding from discussing with technical specialists in the Ministry of Environment on the British Columbia side who are responsible for the permitting of and the maintenance of water quality that, in fact, these projects are meeting the compliance standards for water quality and the potential for downstream effects is not considered to be significant.
In your opinion, do you think that would be the same result with this mine, the process has been very similar permitting process. Is that correct? And if it's similar, do you expect the same results?
Yes, I do. At the first stage of decision-making that we completed by March last year, one of the major tasks of the committee was to determine the potential for significant effects in a transboundary context on fish and water quality through the iterative approach to modifying the mine plan design to make it as environmentally friendly as necessary, in the process of looking at a cumulative effects assessment of water quality, at looking at the road access in terms of the potential for effects on fish, both the British Columbia environmental assessment process participants and the federal government who also participated were satisfied that with the adoption of the appropriate mitigation measures during the construction and operation, that there would be no potential for any transboundary effects. And also during our permitting process, it is my understanding from my discussions with the Ministry of Environment on the British Columbia side that from a water quality point of view, the standards to be set for permitting the mine will be similar or equivalent to the standards set as if the mine was in Alaska.
Thank you. Why do you think this project is being treated differently if there's been some past experience doing this?
I cannot answer that question. It is obvious that the concerns raised on this project were not similarly raised in the other mine project reviews that were undertaken on transboundary rivers, and the same types and levels of potential for effects and the same types and levels of mitigation strategies were in place, and those are the ones that we proposed for here. And so I don't know why in this particular case the type and level of issues raised are as they are.
Okay, I think at this time I'm going to take a brief at ease and we'll please call the meeting back to order now that we're a little bit more comfortably seated. We can say that legislature doesn't try to accommodate people in their little rooms here. Been to other capitals where they have, you know, I walk into the committee rooms, it looks like the floor of our house, you know. But most of the time we don't need it, but sometimes we do.
Are you suggesting something, Mr. Smith?
No, I'm not suggesting. I'm making an observation of where I've been. Okay, I got one or two other questions, and then I'll open it up for members of the committee. Could you explain the level of design criteria regarding the tailings impoundment, and specifically what level of flooding would need to occur to destroy the tailings impoundment dam?
I can answer that question by providing a summary of the conclusions reached by our technical experts in discussions with technical experts on the U.S. side. The dam is, and tailings impoundment is located on the fan of the Shazak Creek floodplain, tributary to the Talsqua River. It is outside the 100-year floodplain of the Talsqua River. It is within a determined floodplain of Shazak Creek. Exactly which floodplain it's in is yet to be determined through further detailed assessment. The dam will be designed to the specifications of the Canadian Dam Safety Standards, and the actual design criteria will be established during the permitting process, but will be designed to withstand whatever natural disaster is deemed to be within the realm of happening. And at this particular time, I don't think there is a design specification, a final dam design specification. Through the discussions that I have been involved in and the subgroups that I have chaired, it was obvious to me that the permittors for the dam will ensure that the dam design criteria will be extremely conservative to ensure that the dam would withstand any natural hazard event, whether it's a debris flow, whether it's a hydrological event. It was determined through a fairly detailed reconnaissance level review of the potential for hazards that debris torrents, debris hazards are not a major factor that would influence the integrity of the tailings pond and dam. Hydrologically, the Shazak Creek has some hydrological data on it from which you can determine return periods. More information will be collected over the life of the project to help finalize what the final dam design would be, but it is my understanding from what I have heard that a doubling of the maximum or the 200-year flow flows in Shaza Creek would make that event up in the 1 to 10,000 return event, and it is my understanding from the technical experts on the Canadian side that that would not breach the dam or in any way destroy its integrity from the point of view of failure, notwithstanding that type of an event, if it ever did happen, could require maintenance or upgrading on the armament around the face of the dam. But the actual dam design details will be determined at the permitting stage under the Provincial Mines Act.
And just about the hazard of the tailings material, I mean, are they, is there any environmental or are they toxic or any type of health hazard?
One of the features of this mine design, as I understand it from the subcommittees that dealt with this, is the ore mined does have with it a pyrite, high sulfide waste material, which would end up in the tailing stream. There would be a pyrite float, what they call a pyrite float in the mill circuit, that would remove all of the sulfide or the majority of the sulfide material from the tailings. And that pyrite float would be mixed with cement and made into what they refer to as a paste backfill and put back into the underground stopes as a both from a mine safety point of view and from an acceptable disposal technology for acid-producing waste material. Also, it is proposed to put into the milling process a source of calcium carbonate from a nearby limestone quarry to enhance the carbonate content of the remaining tailings, and that would elevate the carbonate content in the tailings to make the remaining tailings going to the tailings pond non-acid generating, and there are no health hazard constituents of the tailings or of the effluent. It is my understanding from toxicity testing of bench scale effluent tests that rainbow trout has passed the LC50 test with 100% survival in a 96-hour period, meaning that the effluent in the tailings pond is not acutely toxic. There is no discharge from the tailings pond during the life of the project as it is currently planned. There is a total 100% recycling of all tailings water into the milling process. Any seepage from the dam, any seepage from the tailings pond will be monitored through the development of monitoring wells around the face of the dam downstream, with the potential mitigation plan of pumping any water back into the tailings pond if it was found to be of a deleterious manner. At reclamation, the pond will be dried and the tailings themselves will be covered with a suitable growth medium, and the reclamation plan will put to leave them in a dry, revegetated state.
Thank you. Maybe I could ask you, that would be clear up a lot of people's doubts. Would you take some of those tailings, put them in a large glass, pour water over, and drink the water?
I can't answer that question.
Just wondered. I understand, and we're going to have to move along. If you could shorten up your answers, because I've got a lot of people here, and I want to make sure that they can testify. I understand that British Columbia has had a time deadline to get a permit processed. How many extensions has there been on the regarding the particular project?
Throughout the entire review, there were four.
And have you attempted to schedule an appointment with the governor while you're here?
I have not.
Okay. Just wondered. Is there any other questions by the committee members? Representative Toole.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Could you tell me what the situation is with the First Nations people there and in terms of the settlement, land entitlement, and how the dynamics of that are, and where the First Nations people are with this project.
That is an area that is outside my area of expertise or mandate, so I have a very limited ability to answer that question, other than to say that it is my understanding that the local First Nation, the Tlingit First Nation, are engaged in British Columbia's treaty planning process at a certain stage, and treaty planning or treaty issues were not issues that under the British Columbia Environmental Assessment Act were matters to be covered off under our review, because there was there is another arena within which those issues are being addressed. In the meantime, and I noticed that we do have representatives of the Tlingit here today, we invited Tlingit to sit on the project committee in 1994. They actively participated in the review throughout the entire 3.5-year period. They have been invited to continue to participate in the permitting process, and I can say that their participation, both by themselves and with their consultants, made a positive contribution to making a better mine plan, and it made a major contribution to probably one of the most progressive environmental follow-up and monitoring programs for this project that we have had in British Columbia. And notwithstanding that, they do still have some concerns with respect to this project in their traditional territory. The province keeps an open-door policy to continue to discuss with them the nature of those concerns and opportunities for resolution. In the meantime, as you may be aware, in February, the Taku Tlingit laid a petition with supporting affidavits into the BC Supreme Court, and so the matter is now before the courts, and I'm basically don't have much more and cannot say much more about it than that.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Harris.
Chairman, thank you. Mr. Ringstad, thank you for coming. Is it my understanding that the BC government has issued the permit, the environmental permit for this mine?
We do not have an environmental permit. What has been issued, and it was issued in March of 98, was what they refer to as a project approval certificate, which was basically an approval to proceed to permitting with no authority to undertake any construction. The major permits required of the proponent before surface disturbance can be undertaken on the road, it is a permit under the Forest Practices Code of British Columbia Act. That would be a permit to construct the road. Under the Mines Act, it would be a work system approval and reclamation plan permit for the mine site. And under the British Columbia Waste Management Act, a permit for the handling of any waste material. And none of those permits have been issued to date.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Get a communication that we've had here. It says that Redfern, I guess the company involved here, hasn't addressed the water quality issue downstream of the mine to people. Are you familiar with that? And I'm sure you are. And what response would you have to that?
The environmental assessment we undertook concluded that the advice I received from those agencies with the technical expertise on water quality on the BC and Canadian side agreed that the potential for downstream water quality effects was not significant, and that through the British Columbia Waste Management permitting system, that the details of that, those issues will be addressed to the satisfaction of both British Columbia, Canada, and Alaska State. And as such, before the project is approved to discharge any contaminant materials, that all of those issues would have to be addressed satisfactorily.
I guess one last follow-up then. The crux of the matter is, do you feel from the Canadian side of things that it's essential that this go before the International Joint Commission, or can it be handled between the two governments?
Through the continuing bilateral discussions we've had with BC, Canada, and U.S. federal and state agencies, British Columbia has taken the position that we feel that our our permitting process is an appropriate venue within which to address the remaining issues, and that by way of the invitation for the Alaska State and U.S. federal agencies to participate, we feel that is an appropriate venue.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee members? Hearing none, if you could remain available for any questions that might come up in the future, I'd appreciate it. Thank you for your time. We have Bob Carmichael from Red Fern Resources with a slide presentation. How much time is this going to take? I'm concerned. I'd almost rather get to the people that came to testify.
Get through it in about 5 minutes.
5 minutes? Okay. Let's do it then. Okay. I just want to be sensitive to making sure everybody that came here gets their opportunity to say something. Someone turn off some of the lights. Okay. Oh, there.
The gentleman by the door.
Very quickly, what I'd like to do is just provide some information on some of the technical aspects of this project, which I think may have been misunderstood by a lot of people. Project location is on the Telsco River, which is a tributary of the Taku River. This is a close-up showing the scale here is 4 kilometers. The mine site is actually located on the bank of the Telsco River here. It's about 14 kilometers upstream from the confluence with the Taku River. Tailings pond is this black dot here, which is on Shaza Creek, which is a tributary to the Telsico River. The closest that the mine infrastructure will get to the Taku River is about 14 kilometers. If you're looking up the Telsico River, the old Solaris Taku town site on the left and the mine site on the right. Shaza Creek is this creek flowing in here. Shot of the town site at Telsqua, which is there. The valley has a pretty long history of mining activity. This town existed there for about 30 years, serving the Polaris Taku and later the Telsqua Chief Mine. This shot showing the ore deposit and the historic workings are in silver up here, and the proposed workings are in blue and yellow. I think the note on this slide is that the entire ore body as it exists and the planned underground workings are below the river level. The deposit is located about 3/4 of a mile into the side of the mountain from the river. On mine closure for reclamation, this mine will be allowed to flood naturally. All the stopes will be backfilled, and there'll be no potential for drainage into the Telsico River. The shot of what the mine site will look like when it's constructed. This is the proposed mill site here, all the buildings associated with the mine. It's entirely an underground mine. It has a very small surface footprint. This is the access road heading up Shaza Creek to Adlin. And this is the tailings storage impoundment here in Shaza Creek. The shot of the bench where the plant site location is. This is a picture of the Shaza Creek Valley. It shows the location of the tailings impoundment, which would be right in this area here. And this is where I feel there's been a lot of misunderstanding about what we're trying to do up here. The design for the tailings impoundment is, as you can see, this is the Telsico River flowing down here. It's well clear of any flood danger from the Telsico River. The design parameters that we used were the 1 in 200-year flood on Shaza Creek. The state of Alaska was interested in sort of worst-case scenarios. So as Nora mentioned, one thing they wanted us to investigate was what would happen if, say, the we ran into a volume of water in Shaza Creek that was double the 1 in 200-year flood event. Turns out that that corresponds to about a 1 in 10,000-year return event. It's an extremely unlikely event. In any case, the tailings impoundment would survive such a flooding event like that. So the tailings will be stored in this area, and it's a very good impoundment, and the risk of them being washed down the river is zero. The material that's stored in the tailings impoundment, again, Norm touched on it a bit, will be non-potentially acid-generating. It's mixed with limestone. All of the pyrite is removed out of it and placed back underground. the material that's stored in there will have no potential for acid generation. What that allows us to do is to reclaim it as a dry impoundment. We can dewater it at the end of the mine site, mine life. We can recontour it and revegetate it, and it forms a very nice walkaway solution with no potential for acid mine drainage out of the tailings pond and no concerns about flood devastation of the tailings entering the Taku River system. The environmental protection measures that we've incorporated, keeping the development in hanging wall rocks, which is a little unusual for mining, but we've done that because we want to stay away from some of the rocks which do have acid generating potential. Sulfides will be removed from the tailings, there'll be limestone added to them. We'll put as much of the waste rock as possible back underground. The reclamation involves sealing and flooding the mine workings, which have been backfilled. There's no chance of drainage out of that, and the dry tailing storage, as I described briefly. Just a quick shot of the access road. The concentrate will be hauled up to Atlin and around to Skagway, Alaska. This is a picture of an Anvil range truck from the Faro mine. We'll use very similar configurations. It's been it's closed down now, but it hauled to Skagway for a number of years. This is a port facility that ADA currently owns in Skagway. It's currently dormant, and we'll be using that facility for storing and shipping our concentrate. And that's just a loading facility at Skagway.
Is there any questions?
Lights?
I like it better with the lights off. Any questions for Mr. Carmichael? Mr. Carmichael, I have a question for you. What resources does the state or the United States government have if your project goes ahead and results in environmental damage? I'm not familiar with international law, and I don't know if you're the appropriate person to ask. Mr. Ringstadt might be the appropriate person to ask that question, but what can our state or our country do if your project goes ahead and it results in damage to, doesn't go as planned, and it results to some kind of damage to either our fisheries or the rivers that flow into our country? What recourse under international law or through treaty agreements or whatever do we have to rectify the situation?
That's outside of my area of expertise. Norm, would you be able to speak to that?
No, that's outside my area of expertise. On the provincial side, under the Mines Act, it would
if you could come to the mic, I know it's kind of tight, but people in television land can't hear you.
That's outside my area of expertise. I don't have an answer specifically for that. With respect to the road and the mine itself, under our provincial legislation, there are bonds that are established to protect against any risk and liability that would be leveled to the provincial government, but I do not have an answer for it across the border.
Okay. Well, that's certainly a question I'd like to have answered at some point, if you could possibly research that
well.
For us. Maybe now and the time... Bill, if it moves, is taken up on the floor. Okay, let's see. We have Al Klo, the president of Juneau Chapter of Alaska Miners. Mr. Klo, if you could, brevity would be appreciated.
I'll be happy to do that. Thank you, Representative Ogan, and members of the committee. Steve Burrell, Introduction, Al Cloud, the local chapter president of Alaska Miners. Steve Burrell, our executive director, has provided you with written comments on behalf of the association. I would just amplify briefly on those. The long history of mining in the Tulsa-Quaw area, certainly I believe, bears consideration in this project. As Norm Ringstedt highlighted, there are at least four examples of other transborder mining projects that are on salmon streams that have been successfully permitted and operated and currently in some cases being reclaimed. Obviously, there are some heightened issues on this. From the Miners Association perspective, we are very much in favor of the tenets laid out in this joint concurrent resolution, which basically says let's get this thing back to the technical people, to the technical discussions that need to take place to make sure this project moves forward in a responsible manner, and we would submit that perhaps the IJC issue has served its purpose in getting people more aware of the issue, getting more dialogue and more involvement by all concerned. And as I say, it is time to move it back off that forum and get it moved ahead and resolved. And with that, thank you for your time.
Any questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Clough. I'd like this time to open take a few people from public testimony. This is Errol Champion. Mr. Champion, I'll talk to you on the phone time or two.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'll try and be brief, and I appreciated you asking the key question that our association has on this whole matter, and we've circulated correspondence to you prior. But for the record, my name is Errol Champion, and I'm a cabin owner and a member of the Taku River Recreation Association. Appreciate the opportunity to comment on this resolution before you. Our association was formed several years ago to represent the property owners and users of the Taku River Valley, mainly on the Alaska side of the border. There are 130 lots on the CBJ tax rolls and 70 cabins built over the past 60 years. Several of our members are second generations, until I was talking with Neil, and he tells me he's third generation user of the river.
Fifth,
Errol. Okay. Since the last ice age, the Taku River is the main access route to the northern interior. Tlingit natives and others sailed up and down this river between canoe landing and tidewater. It's a distance of about 100 miles. Earlier this week, our association sent you communications outlining our views. We neither support nor oppose the reopening of the Tulsiquot Chief Mine because it's a Canadian project and it's the obligation of the BC government to review and regulate the proposed mine. Our association's main concern centers on the fact that Redfern Resources has failed to respond to our repeated requests for their position on how they plan on protecting and maintaining water quality below the border. And the visitors would be devastating. We don't understand why Redfern does not want to communicate with the members of the Recreation Association and the state of Alaska. While it's the sole responsibility of the BC government to review and regulate this project, we do not want to see a repeat of the soil contamination situation that Alaskans faced in Skagway 3 years ago. That Canadian mine had no responsibility and was not accountable for the cleanup costs. Further, Premier Clark has not been a particularly good neighbor to Alaska, and because of previous encounters, we frankly don't think he cares about the Alaskan side of the Taku River. We would encourage the legislature to rewrite this resolution to contain language that demands a response from Redfern and the BC government on how they plan to protect and ensure downstream water quality during the life of the project. Alaskans deserve to have those questions answered. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there any questions from the committee? Thank you. Next, we have Douglas Dobians. I'm mispronouncing it. Probably am. Sorry, it happens to me all the time, a name like Hogan.
Yeah, good afternoon, Chairman Hogan and the rest of the committee. My name is Douglas Dobians. I'm the environmental planner for the Douglas Indian Association on Douglas Island. I'll be very brief. I want to just bring you up to date with the circumstance that we have taken. We have a joint project with EPA and USGS to conduct water quality monitoring on the Taku River for a five-year period. Our first sampling event was in October, which was reconnaissance. The second sampling event was in November, which is being analyzed at the Manchester Laboratory in Washington State. This is to parts per billion. It's been collected under the protocols of USGS and EPA, and we have a quality assurance project plan that's been accepted by US EPA as being a valid laboratory and field sampling guide. We feel that it's very necessary that someone baseline the environmental conditions that are in the river at this time. In our review of the Redfern data, one thing that was glaring to us is that the samples were single sample events that were repeated, but there was no regular sampling that would actually baseline the conditions in the river. And so we put forward this project as a proposal to USGS and entered with the director in the state of Alaska on a joint project to conduct this. at the end of 5 years, there will be a report published by USGS that will be an official interpretive report published in the USGS database. And I think that that's something that you should be aware of, that it's necessary for us to establish the scientific credibility, because there's a lot of discussion without really having reference to a regular database. Since I'm a technical person, I don't want to talk any more about the issues, but we do have a council member from the Douglas Indian Association here, and I would suggest that our time would be better used by him presenting. This is Michael Dunlap. He is on the Environmental Committee and also on the Council of Douglas Indian Association, and is the past president of council.
Mr. Dunlap.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kaku Ashan. I am Ishtit Chihit Kanahadi from the Taku Kwan on this side of the border. And I am an IRA tribal council member from the Douglas Indian Association, a tribal government in this area. I'd like to read our concerns on this current resolution being considered. The crux of the question is captured in the last whereas clause, which reads, "Whereas the government of British Columbia has made assurances that the development of the Telsequad Chief Mine will result in no transboundary impacts." This is the very question that is being challenged by Alaska's Governor Tony Knowles and by the Douglas Indian Association. The truth is that we do not trust the British Columbia enough to let them proceed without more assurances than they have offered. If there could be a binding contract, assurances that would require compensation in the event of a transboundary impact, such as using a posted bond that would be put up by the mine ahead of time, we would be more impressed. It is not an arbitrary position to question the assurances of British Columbia in this matter. There are indications that Glenn Clark's credibility is in question on a number of counts at this time in general. And the track record for the environmental control over mine pollution in BC is not good in particular. There is the issue of the judicial review of the BC mining certificate that has been filed by the Taku River Tlingits. The First Nations was concerned enough to take an expensive legal action to defend their homeland. We are told to expect the review to be heard within the next few weeks. It does not seem prudent for the legislature of the state of Alaska to be making a claim that all of the concerns have been met over this issue. In fact, it may be that the international intervention of the IJC is the only way to deal with the jurisdictional question and the outstanding environmental concerns that have been expressed by the many interest groups, in addition to the Douglas Indian Association and the Taku River Tlingits. The Douglas Indian Association has begun a water testing program on the Taku River together with the USGS and the EPA. The second sampling will be taken in the next 2 weeks and shipped to the EPA Manchester lab in Washington State. This is a 5-year project that will document the baseline water quality at the USGS gauge just downstream of the BC and Alaska border. The database will document the water quality from November 1998 to October 2002, according to official protocols of the USGS and the EPA. We suggest that this work will tell us whether there are transboundary impacts or not, so that we will not have to take the word of British Columbia or Redford Mine Company. We ask that the Alaska State Legislature support this activity rather than assuming that there will be no transboundary impacts. Ask instead that the contractual assurances established that will pay for any damages to the valuable fisheries and the other natural resources that the Alaskans depend upon from the Taku River. The legislature is not prepared to take this action. We ask that, at the very least, the proposed resolution being considered here not be passed.
Sir,
I'll keep it brief, sir, because there's a lot of people who wish to make comments.
I'd like to ask other members if they have you know, you said that their track record is not good. That's a real general statement. Can you briefly cite what you're referring to? You know, you're talking about BC's track record with water quality. It's a rather general statement.
If I could answer that, I've done some environmental...
Come to the microphone, and I need to just, I'm not trying to run a power play here, but I have to identify people so that our we can accurately record.
I'll yield
speaking.
To Mr. Dobbins.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Dobbins?
Yes, thank you. I've personally done review of two mines in British Columbia. One is the Western Mines that feeds into Buttle Lake on Vancouver Island. This was done under Dr. Alan Austin at the University of Victoria, who just recently retired and has filed all of his papers with the library at the University of Victoria. We found extensive problems with tumors in fish, elevated heavy metals. It resulted in a major amount of questions on this, since it was the drinking water source for the city of Campbell River. This issue has been going for approximately 30 years, and it's been in and out of numerous discussions. The mine is in a provincial park of British Columbia, I should add. And the other...
I have to ask a question. Was that mine permitted under the same permitting process as this one?
No, it was permitted under an earlier process. However, since it was brought up numerous times by concerned citizens for redress by British Columbia, and they failed to get very good satisfaction, I think it's pertinent. The second is Islands Mine that feeds into Coatzino Sound, and that's been used, cited as a stellar example of dealing with tailings disposal in the marine environment, and I can tell you that that was not the case. There's problems with crabs migrating juvenile salmonids, and I participated with some First Nations people in monitoring that on northern Vancouver Island. So from my experience, I would say, as a professional opinion, that there is not a good track record in this regard.
Okay, professional opinion, what is your educational background?
I'm a master's of environmental science.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Next, we're going to have to, I'm counting up how many people we have. We're going to pull the sheet out there, and anybody who hasn't signed up, it's too late. You're probably not going to have time to testify anyway. We're going to have to ask that we keep to about 2 minutes to be able to get through everybody. Or if you can work amongst yourselves and say, okay, I want him to speak for me and I'm speaking for these people, that would help too, but I want to give as much fairness to the process as we can. Kathy Hansen? Oh, I'm sorry. I need to look at that. Thank you. So everybody gets 2 minutes and 5 seconds. Eldon Dennis.
My name is Eldon Dennis. I'm a Juneau resident. I've lived here for approximately 32 years. I've been involved in commercial fisheries for about 28 years. My comments will be brief and general. First, would I tell you that I fully support the governor's efforts to ensure the safety of our Taku fisheries. They're extremely important to us, and I think everything should be done to ensure that if this mine is developed, it's done in a safe manner. And secondly, I would like to comment on my first encounter at a meeting with Red Fern representatives, so you get a perspective, my perspective anyway, on faith in this system. They proposed a barging system at that time, and when meeting and discussing with them, they were totally unaware that the barge schedules they were planning to run would interfere with gill nets all across Tonkawa Inlet. They didn't have an idea that a fishery was even operating at that time of the year, which is the summer. Secondly, based on our experience with the Canadian government dealing with the transboundary treaty negotiations, I don't believe a word they say. And last but not least, I find it incredible that we are here today with members of the Alaska legislature purporting to serve the interest of a Canadian mining company rather than looking after the interest of Alaskan citizens involved in the commercial fisheries.
Any members from the committee have questions? Hearing none. Thank you for your
Carl Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Resource Committee. My name is Carl Peterson. I own and operate a 42-foot gillnet and longline vessel on which I catch and process salmon, halibut, shrimp, and other species. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify before this committee. I am speaking against House Resolution Number 4. The reason I am against this resolution is that I don't believe there has been enough information on this project regarding safeguards for critical salmon spawning and rearing habitat. I also have major concerns about possible leaching of acid from this mine into the Taku River watershed. This river system now supports a world-class run of king salmon, as well as a large run of sockeye and coho salmon. Pinks and chums use this river system, along with numerous freshwater species of fish and large numbers of waterfowl and other wildlife. I would like to make it clear that I'm not against mining or other resource development. I just believe that these projects should not have an impact on existing industries and recreational users. I do support the efforts of Governor Knowles to bring the highest level of protection to this pristine watershed. Thank you very much for your time.
A question for you.
Sure.
On line 20 of page 2, it says, be it resolved, Alaska legislature recommends continuing the cooperative effort between the two governments toward the environmentally responsible development of Tusquala Chief Mine. Is that language offensive to you?
No, I have no problem with what the legislature working towards that goal.
So basically, your problem is a request to withdraw from the International Joint Commission?
No, I think we should go to the International Joint Commission and back Tony Knoll's efforts to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Chairman, one quick question. There's been a couple people with the same theme here, and I'm sure there'll probably be a few others with the same theme, but what do you think that this international commission can do that our environmental agencies and the state can do?
Well, I'm not an expert on this. I just go commercial fishermen. Basically, what happens when some of these mine projects go through or other resource development projects, and if there's a problem with leaching of acid and stuff, there's no recourse for commercial fishermen. All of a sudden, the fish don't show up or they're gone, and we're just out of business. And it works over and over again. And in Prince William Sound, Exxon Valdez right now, they're saying that, you know, they don't have any effect on the herring fisheries up there, nothing, 10 years after the spill. It's like, right, you can still find oil and stuff in the water down there. So people up there haven't even been paid for that disaster. So we would like to have at least some recourse through our legislature or through the governor's office that says we have, you know, if something does happen up there, that we can be compensated or at least, you know.
So you feel this international commission is going to give you better...
To tell you the truth, I really don't know much about the International Commission, but I do know that just by going through what I've heard here today, that we don't have much recourse with the British Columbia government, and any effluent coming out of that mine will go downstream straight to us. So.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any other questions? Hearing none. Carl Peterson. Next is Kathy Welson.
My name is Kathy Weltstein. The entire focus seems to be on Redfern and the mine, and I would like all of you to be really aware of a 150-kilometer road that is going through the watershed with over 50 stream crossings. The road is proposed, the proposal is laid out, and there have been many more stakings along the proposed road. And I think if the focus stays on the one mine, I believe the focus needs to look at the whole watershed. And what will come up, nickel and diming later, as time goes on, because there's only one watershed there.
Thank you. Any questions? So maybe I could clarify something, but I believe the road is a private road. Correct, Mr. Carmichael? Is that?
Yeah, the road will be permitted under the BC Ministry of Energy and Mines as a private industrial road. There'll be a manned gate on it, and it will allow access only to people on mine business. So it will not be open to the public.
Thank you for answering that question. Okay. We have Jim Becker. We're moving along, and I appreciate the public's
Committee. My name is Jim Becker. I'm the president of the Juneau chapter of Southeast Alaska Gilliners, and I'll be making a presentation for USAG today. We are an organization of men and women who make a living commercial fishing in Southeast Alaska. We have chapters in Puget Sound, Ketchikan, Wrangell, Petersburg, Juneau, and Haines. We are here today to encourage you to support the administration's efforts to have the issue of the Tulsa-Claw Chief Mine resolved by the International Joint Commission. To date, the process has been totally inadequate in addressing the impact of the mine on Alaskan Taku, gillnet, sports, and subsistence fisheries. The extent of our involvement was one public hearing at the Baranoff Hotel in the fall of 1997. At that hearing, Redford presented a full and complete overview of the proposed mine. However, many questions from the audience raised serious doubts as to the thoroughness of Redfern's application and also raised concerns about the potential development using the potential development using the road built for Tulsa-Claw Chief's mine. At the conclusion of that public hearing, we accepted Redfern's offer to get on their mailing list and continue the dialogue with them on unresolved issues concerning potential impact on our fishery. To date, we have received nothing from Redfern. It seems that we were afforded the opportunity of commenting on the mine at the end of their public permitting process because in March of 1998, Redfern was issued a permit. Our organization has a responsibility to work diligently to protect our fishing industry and ensure the long-term survivability of our fishing industry. We have an internal board resolution which guides our efforts in matters of economic development, water quality, and habitat issues. The final part of our resolution says we strive to make it clear to we are not opposed to economic development. Expansion or development of new industries can be good for everyone as long as development doesn't come at the expense of an existing industry. USAG has a long and successful working relationship with other mine applicants, most notably Core Alaska. We were the first fishing organization to publicly support their Kensington mine, and even after Core Alaska had to make basic change to their tailing discharge, we continued to have a healthy dialogue with them. From our perspective, the process of permitting this mine didn't adequately consider the impact on a healthy, viable Alaska fishery. We are the one industry just down the stream, and we weren't even brought into this discussion till the very end. We base our concerns about the mine operation on information submitted by the Department of Fish and Game, Habitat and Restoration Division. They say in an October 30th, 1997 memorandum and in subsequent memorandums the following. There, the concerns are of downstream interested party. Tulsa-Claw Chief Mines and related activity has the potential to substantially affect the water quality and fisheries of the Taku River watershed. In comment about Flanagan Slough, the department said, we are particularly concerned about the short and long-term impact of this area. The department has concerns about the tailing storage ponds and water treatment plant as well. The department concludes in the event of a landslide, avalanche, or earthquakes, tailing impoundment seepage would increase substantially. They raised the question also of how the cyanide would be shipped. In regard to the access road, the department raises questions about sediment, siltation, and fish passages. Also, the department questions secondary impact from additional development of the newly established access road. These are our concerns as well, and if the mine were in Alaska, all these and other related issues would be completely hammered out in the public process. The only avenue left to protect Alaska interest is the International Joint Commission. We appreciate and support Governor Knoll's insistence that this matter be resolved there. Thank you very much.
Sir, Representative Joel has a question for you.
I just want to make sure I heard you correctly, Mr. Baker. You said that the operator of the mine offered to keep you informed, and you got on their mailing list and then heard nothing?
That's true.
What I thought I heard you say.
Thank you very much. Mr. Carmichael, I would maybe if you could be kind enough to maybe jot down some of the questions and some of the problems, and maybe I'll give you a little bit of time to respond to some of that at the end of it. And
okay.
Hopefully we can, through this process, foster some better communications. And I think it's apparent that some people are feeling left out of the loop here. Aaron Brakel.
Good afternoon, Chairman Hogan and members of the committee. My name is Dan Brakel. I'm from Juneau here. I appreciate the opportunity to speak today. I support the governor's position on this, and I think it does need to go to the International Joint Commission. That gives Alaska a seat at the table. You know, what this resolution does is say, hey, let's not even sit at the table. You know, let's not go to this joint commission and have our people there when they're talking about it. There's a lot of concerns about this mine and about that road. I just want to speak briefly about the road. That's a major, major impact. The Tongass Land Management Plan says that the largest impact on fish habitat from the logging that happens here in Southeast is from the road building. And I am very concerned about the road building there. I mean, there's a lot of problems with that route. I mean, it's steep, it's gnarly, it's going to impact a lot downstream. I mean, there's a big, big problem with fish. And once they get this road open, sure, the mining company says, well, it's a closed private road, it's ours and we'll take care of it and not let anybody on it. But if you go, I fly south probably once a year. If you take a look out the window on the port side as you're headed south, look in there at Canada and BC. That place is trashed. You know, those clear cuts go miles along the streams. Miles. They'll just be running right along. You know, they right up the side of the mountain, right into the avalanche zones, et cetera. They're not going to stop that from happening in Canada. I mean, their record on fish habitat protection is terrible. So I hope that you support the governor's position and go to the International Joint Commission on this so that we, Alaska, can have a seat at the table. Thank you.
Questions? Okay, next we have, let's see, that was Aaron Brakel, right? We have Jay Crandall.
Hi, I'm Jay Crandall. I'll be very brief. Thank you. So brief, I'll just use one word. No, vote no on the resolution. And I'm worried about the First Nations people who haven't spoken yet. I don't know why you haven't called on me. I'm on them yet. They've come all the way from the Upper Yukon to speak to you. I don't know.
If they signed up, we'll call on them.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to exclude anybody. Thank you for your brevity so that we can get to them. Brad, looks like Pierce.
My name is Brad Pierce. I'm a Taku River cabin owner. And I guess I have nothing against Canadians or Canadian companies, but I just wonder why the legislature would want to promote the interests of a Canadian company over that of Alaska voters that are in the, that have cabins up the river or that earn their livelihood out in the inlet. And so I support what the governor's doing by making sure that this developer meets international standards. That's all I got to say.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Now, just for the record, Mr. Pierce, were you were speaking on behalf of the administration or yourself?
For myself.
For yourself, but you are a member of the administration?
Right.
Okay. And could you tell us what you do there?
Well, I'm with the Office of Management Budget.
Okay, thank you very much. For the record, in case it didn't get recorded by the mics, as he's with OMB. Mr. Joe Gelda. Geldof isn't here. We'll come back to him. Lori Ferguson Craig. With Alaskans for Juneau, huh?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for the opportunity to express some opinions about this important project. I have provided written comments for you all that say basically we do support IJC consideration and referral for this project and that we do not support the resolution. Rather than reiterate those statements, I will leave them for you to read. There are a couple things that have come up that may be relevant that are not in our comments. number one, the process between how Canada decides these projects and how the U.S. and Alaska decide them. There was a similar approach taken to the AJ mine here in Juneau called phasing. And our citizens group and another citizens group appealed the city's decision of going ahead in segments, in not knowing exactly what would happen before permits were granted. They chose to make those decisions before the answers were in. We took that all the way to the Supreme Court and ended up with a fine precedent that says that is not to be done. And I would be happy to provide you with a copy of that court ruling so that you can consider that as you take your vote and how your vote would be influenced by standing Supreme Court decision-making. The second point, very briefly, is about the IJC. I have been following an issue that they are working on right at this time. They are primarily an organization that was designed to resolve problems with the Great Lakes. They are currently in some hearings right now between Canada and the U.S. And it provides a forum for both sides to present their approaches in an equal and fair way. There are currently four hearings going on in the U.S. side in citizens that are affected by this Great Lakes potential decision, and four hearings going on that have just concluded today over the last 2 weeks on the Canadian side. And I think that's a fair kind of approach that we see here with the legislature, that you want to hear what everybody has to say. And so I would suggest that, along with some of my fellow people, I recommend that you not pass this resolution at this time and consider continuing to support the governor in his assessment that this should have IJC referral. Thank you kindly.
Very much. And we'd be happy to take those things you'd like to submit to us, and I'll make sure that they get them. Let's see. We have Michael Dunlap.
Already testified.
Oh, that's right. He did testify. I'm sorry. I didn't check it off. Rich Davis. You're with SPC. Seafood Producers Cooperative. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Resources Committee, my name is Rich Davis. I'm a 36-year resident of Juneau, and for the last 30 years, a commercial fisherman. My wife and I and our three children are totally dependent on this state's fisheries, commercial fisheries resources. I fish commercially and recreationally for salmon from the Taku River since I was 10 years old. I serve the 400-member Seafood Producers Cooperative as their representative to United Fishermen of Alaska. We harvest Taku River salmon in both gillnet and troll fisheries in southeast. Mining issues as they relate to mineral extractions and fisheries issues as they relate to water quality are not new to us. The Tulsiqua Chief Mine Project does not answer the questions or assuage the concerns of Alaska's resource agencies at this point. Our state's resource agencies have our interests and concerns in mind. A few corporate executives and government diplomats from Canada can show up here and change a few minds. How convenient for them. The Canadians are not your constituents. If they're going to mine upstream with adequate safeguards for the water quality necessary to sustain salmon habitat, then let's make them prove it with thorough science, good planning, and satisfy the state's concerns that our resource agencies have. Put yourself into fishermen's shoes. Our neighboring government has degraded its waterways, exploited its salmon resources to the point where their commercial salmon fisheries in British Columbia are no longer sustainable. Rather than face the reality of their own irresponsibility, they for years have labeled Alaska's fisheries as the culprit. Their government is not my government. I don't trust them, and they don't elect you. We oppose the resolution, and we'll support the governor's effort to resolve the differences we have through the International Joint Commission until the mine's proponents convince Alaska's resource agencies that water quality and fish habitat concerns of the users of the Taku River drainage are addressed. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Davis, what would make you comfortable? What steps do you think the Red Fern and Canadian government...
If they could convince the Fish and Game and the DEC that the efforts that they're going to undertake are going to ensure the safeguards of the spawning habitat and the rearing habitat and the critical fisheries habitat and the resources that inhabit that river, I would be much more comfortable than where I am now. But our state agencies at this point have not been convinced that our concerns are addressed.
We have Deputy Commissioner Bosworth here. That will...
It would have been nice to have him testify before, because maybe he's changed his position since position that I read was. But if that's the case, then...
Alder, can you state position in 2 minutes or less?
I'd really rather defer our time to the folks who have traveled quite a long distance.
Okay, we'll be sure to get them on board for that.
We have not changed our basic position.
All right. Okay, thank you, sir. Any questions? Mr. Tim Bristol.
Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. I'll keep it really brief. I hope we can get to the folks who came down from Atlin. They got in here right at 1 o'clock, cleared customs, and I zoomed them into town, so I hope they get a chance. Just for the record, we are adamantly opposed to this resolution. We think that the International Joint Commission actually would give the state of Alaska more control over development of this mine. I grew up on the Great Lakes, and there were a lot of IJC issues that came up, and usually it was the Canadians very concerned about something that was going on the American side of the border, and they would go to the IJC to make sure that they had fair representation, being a smaller country and having a lot less people on their side of the border. And I just kind of see it as turnabout, and I think it's fair play. And I would also encourage the legislature to look at the concerns that the commercial fishermen are bringing up here. They probably have the most intimate relationship with Canadians when it comes to treaty negotiations and dealing with allocation of resources, particularly salmon. I think that we should defer to them on this issue. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Hearing none, moving right along, we have Dan Weir.
My name is Don Weir. I'm from Atlin, British Columbia. Thank you to Tim for picking us up at the airport. We sat waiting for 3 hours for the beaver, but we did make it. I prepared a submission, which I will give to you, and also a longer thing detailing problems with the BC Environmental Assessment Act and why it should be of concern to you.
If the record you're with, please.
I'm with the Taku Wilderness Association out of Atlin. There are two key questions here which I really think that people should be thinking about more seriously, and it's a broader question than Redfern. Our concern with this whole project, in addition to the problems with the Redfern mine, are the long-term impacts, looking at the watershed over 10 or 20-year period. Our main concern here, and a lot of it was from talking to people in the BC government, is that there is an agenda here to have a road going from Atlin to Telegraph Creek, setting up basically an industrial corridor in there for logging and for mining. We knew that if the Redfern project did go ahead, it was given project approval certificate, that interest would be aroused, and that is exactly what happened. The Muddy Lake, or the Explorer Gold, moved into and was doing exploration work on the main stem Taku. People who were rafting down the river sat down with those people, talked to them, asked them what their long-term mine plan was, and they said they didn't really feel they needed the Tulsiaqua Chief Road, that they wanted to punch a road from the mine site on the main stem connecting with the Muddy Lake Road. A month later, I came to Juneau, was talking to an Alaska State Fisheries official, and when I showed him where they were talking about punching a road, he said that is the heart of the Taku with regard to the fishery. We know that that is what the government would like to do, to pull in tax revenue, and that is what our concern is here. The Redfern, a lot of the work they have done is decent work, but the long-term impact on the watershed is what people should be thinking about, whether the IJC, we would hope the IJC, if it did happen, would address that. The other question, which I think all stakeholders should have a major concern with, is whether the monitoring and the regulatory processes in BC will adequately address issues if the mine does go ahead, and that is what I address in here. There is a long litany of pollution abatement orders, violations to fisheries acts, one thing after another. I have 6 pages of them here just on two mines, one the Huckleberry mine and the Kemess mine in the interior of BC. And I think that should be a concern if the mine does go ahead. I'll read just a brief snippet here. From the point of view of other stakeholders, the key question should be whether the assessment of this process properly addressed the short and long-term impacts of this project. Another question is whether the mitigation measures created by the provincial government to cover up flaws in Redfern's project report will adequately deal with the long-term impacts. The best way to make this determination is to look at British Columbia's track record on other mining projects. The record does not provide much assurance. We have been told by numerous government officials that due to severe budgetary cutbacks, it will be difficult, if not impossible, to properly investigate and remedy the inevitable problems that will come. It's your call whether you want to go to an IJC or not, or even if the IJC would address the issues, but there are some serious problems here Taku River Tlingit have filed a court challenge against a project certificate, and the key part of that case is that there were clear violations of the environmental assessment. Those violations were made on political grounds because the government wanted this project. And there's a history of these things happening, and the impact will not be on us in Atlin. Except socioeconomic reasons, the impact will be on you downriver if the watershed is opened up. And I hope you will just take a serious look and perhaps delay a decision on this resolution until the outcome of the court case in the summer, because we think it will indicate that there were some really serious and blatant violations, and it should be of concern to you.
Can you tell us where Atlin is? Is it the headwaters of the Taku? Or?
Atlin is north of the Taku watershed on Atlin Lake. It's about 90 kilometers, 60 miles south of the Yukon border.
Is there any questions for the witness?
Okay, thank you so much.
Appreciate your flying all the way in from there to testify. And Joan Jack is from Atlin here.
You must be, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You must be calling at random because I try to respect protocol and let the men in my community speak before me, but I will seize the opportunity.
I'd be happy to.
No, that's fine.
Respect that.
I'll deal with it later. I'll just say it wasn't me.
I'm just going down on the list. You signed up for it.
By country, I think, to speak first here. So.
For the record, my name is Joan Jack, and I'm here speaking on behalf of the Nackinac Center for Aboriginal Learning and Living, which is a nonprofit organization which was formed by Tlingit people within the Canadian portion of the Taku watershed. It's difficult to know what to say in a situation like this. I don't pretend to understand your politics, or as one of the men here has alluded, what good would an IJC do anyway? I mean, I don't know. All I know is that somebody very powerful within your country thinks that he needs to do that. And we have very serious concerns about what's been going on within the province of British Columbia. I don't even know what the proper, if it's Senator Joel or to address you properly, but, you know, you had some concerns about the First Nations issues, and I personally believe that the resolution as presented is misleading. You know, the whereases within the resolution imply that everything has gone well within the environmental assessment legislative process of the province. If it had gone well, the First Nation people affected by this issue would not be in court. We did participate, as Mr. Ringstad indicated. He said that in a way to try to get you to believe, or he made me feel that way anyway, to get you to believe that everything was okay. We participated right through. We did our best. Under-resourced and gone $170,000 in debt, I might add, to participate. We participated, and the Tuck River Tlingit First Nation filed a formal dissent to the Project Review Committee's decision to approve that project certificate, and that dissent is available. I can submit that at a later time to you for your consideration. We did our own review of the project. You know, we did participate. And not because of the man who introduced this resolution seemed to be implying, maybe I'm paranoid today, but he seemed to be implying that the First Nations issues had to do with larger issues. I felt like saying, well, you're darn right they do. But that aside, we have raised concerns based on Western science, you know, on your way of doing things. We have hired technicians, and we have raised those concerns that the work that's been done on this project doesn't even meet the standards of sound science. They're proposing grizzly bear monitoring to be done as we go. I live in the valley with my husband. I live with the grizzly bears. I don't know one grizzly bear that's going to be around once you start bulldozing down trees. So the baseline data for these protection mechanisms is not going to be there. Any self-respecting moose or grizzly is going to be long gone because of the noise. They will acclimatize to the intervention over maybe a 20-year period. They get used to it. It's easy access, travel, whatever. But the baseline data is not there. The province hasn't done the work. I could go on and on. I would much prefer if you had some questions. I'm also a non-practicing lawyer called to the bar in Manitoba, so I do have a legal background. You know, wouldn't be able to give any legal opinions here, but I do understand this situation both traditionally, culturally, and in terms of the white law to a certain degree. And I'd be happy to take some questions if there were any.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions?
Just a comment. When I heard the answer, I could to the question that I had asked earlier. I serve in the minority party. Oh, by the way, we're representatives.
Okay, thank you.
And I serve in the minority party, and oftentimes we don't agree with bills as they work their way through the process. And we may vote against them when they get to the end, but we make every insurance that through the process that goes through, that we try and make the best difference as we can as it moves along. And I just was wondering whether or not that was the case in terms of the involvement of the First Nations people in this thing. And and that's why I asked the question, and then figuring that there are going to be people from there that might answer it. And I'm glad you did.
In closing, I would just like to say that it's been a real opportunity to be here today, and I thank you for your time. And what I found interesting today was how several of your citizens pointed out that, you know, this resolution does, in fact, in a way, support a Canadian company and a Canadian government, you know, that no matter what you want to say about the province's track record, I mean, we're in court with them, so we're not very happy. And I thought that was a good point, you know, that I would urge the House. I don't understand what the benefit of going to the IJC would be, honestly, except that I understand that it's an international regulatory body that would ensure for all parties involved things were done to the best of our abilities. And I don't feel, as one person who lives in that place, I live there, that the provincial government is meeting our needs or protecting anything. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. And in our culture, it's always good to get the last word, so you're doing pretty well.
8 years of university didn't help.
Usually the one who gets the last word wins. Just to make his point. We are running critically short on time. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I sure want to get your husband in here to make sure he has the word. I think maybe I'll go to him next, if that's all right. I assume that is your husband because he has the same last name. So
does everybody have one?
Should be Brian.
Yes. I want to thank you for letting me speak my piece here. I always wanted to speak before my wife because she always says everything I want to say. So